from my perspective, we have a mission, vision, and values. So already shared the mission. The values are passion, persistence, and presence. That describes the ideal team member. So our mission is what we do every day.
Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace, where we discuss real-time workplace issues with experts to get you the best solutions for your company. I'm your host, Carol Schultz, organizational strategist and creator of the Organizational Scaffold System. Let's get into it. Welcome back to Evolving Your Workplace. I'm your host, Carol Schultz. Quick reminder, we like to keep these conversations as authentic as possible, so we leave in the best parts and the mistakes. So for each episode, our team decides what we think are valuable topics for leaders listening on the go. However, for today's episode, our guest inspired an interesting conversation when he and I first spoke. What he feels like is key when it comes to evolving a workplace. I'm excited to be joined by President and CEO of First Alliance Credit Union, Brent Rempe. Brent, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me, Carol.
My pleasure. So let's start here. Tell our audience a little bit about what you do at First Alliance.
Yeah, at First Alliance, we are driven by our mission, vision, values. So I'd say we're a purpose-first organization. And our team in 2024, going into 2025, redefined our mission, vision, values. Because during strategic planning, our board asked, do your mission, vision, values still fit? They were actually designed, I think, by a marketing team in 2016. Not our marketing team, an exterior.
That doesn't even matter.
Yeah. And with that, decided that I'm a strong believer and I'm a little bit of a Jim Collins fan, good to great. He wrote a seminal article from Harvard Business Review in the 90s, I believe, called Building Your Company's Vision. And it suggested starting a Mars group. And what the Mars group is which 5 to 7 people live and breathe what it, the essence to be at First Alliance Credit Union, live our values. And so the team, the entire aggregate team, we had about 70 employees at the time, elected a group to redefine our mission, vision, values. And I think from that moment on, that's changed the trajectory of our organization.
Yeah, that's really.
And with that, our mission was simple. It's tangible. We show up, we listen to your story, and we provide possibilities.
So do you think the fact that you're mission-driven, does that have anything to do with you being a nonprofit?
Yeah, so yes. Credit unions, by their nature, we're kind of exist in between charitable organization, a nonprofit, and a for-profit.
Right.
So we're not quite a 501c3 and we're not quite a bank. We're somewhere in the middle as a not-for-profit.
Okay.
So we have a lot of flexibility just being, we're a not-for-profit because when we were founded in the turn of the 1900s, early 1900s, some other mutual organizations had some non-tax exempt status. But yeah, it's 100% who we are. People helping people is in the credit union ethos. Mm-hmm. But then I think even then there's a divergence of credit unions as a scale. Struggle, I think, sometimes to hold on to that ethos. And I'm not saying there's an example of several. I can think of Schools First Credit Union out in California. They are, I believe, $30 billion. To give you a size of scale, worth $335 million in assets. Yeah. I think that is an incredibly mission-driven organization. I respect the CEO. I've traveled with him, actually, to Kenya previously. And they're able, with that scale, to maintain their mission, vision, values. But I think they might be a rare example of scaling. We heard a colleague recently said, you know, we're not growing for growth's sake, but unfortunately, if we're not growing, we're dying as a credit union. So how do you define something? How do you give people something to believe in that then creates momentum for that?
Interesting. So, you know, as you know, and our listeners, the podcast's all about evolving the workplace, obviously. And we've heard all sorts of takes on, you know, how to stay ahead and continually improve the work environment, employee relations, customer relations, marketing operations, you name it, right? So when you and I first spoke, you had three specific aspects that helped your business evolve. So can you take us back to what those are and how you arrived at them?
Yes. Well, you're going to have to remind me what those were because it's been, we spoke last week. But from my perspective, we have a mission, vision, and values.
Right.
So already shared the mission.
Right.
The values are passion, persistence and presence.
Right.
That describes the ideal team member. So our mission is what we do every day. Mm-hmm. Our values are who we are individually mm-hmm. and as an organization, how we treat each other, how we show up for our members. Mm-hmm. And then our vision is an aspirational statement. And that aspiration, if we achieve it, will put us out of business. So our vision is a financial oasis where everyone has access to the opportunities they deserve. Mm-hmm. But with that vision or those values particularly, we were able to inject them into our hiring practices. Mm-hmm. And so these are adjectives of our ideal employees. So these are right. what our ideal, these describe our ideal employees. Their behaviors our ideal employees exhibit. Mm-hmm. And so that is very much shared in our hiring practices and then in our job descriptions, in our performance evaluations. Mm-hmm. We have regular one-on-ones, so our managers are coaching to our values. And unfortunately, there's also some, not just onboarding to the values, but if there's been occasional offboarding to the values as well. And that's been transformational. And the fact if people aren't aligned, regardless of actual production performance, your performance, your holistic performance is how you treat each other, how you treat our members.
So you said passion, persistence, and what was the third thing?
Presence.
And presence. So tell me how you go about interviewing for those things.
Yeah, that is a very great question. We yeah. have some action-oriented questions, so some behavioral interviews, asking people specific, what are you passionate about? When have you exhibited persistence? How would you define presence? So interview, that's built into the interview questions. And then there's mm-hmm. some behavioral specific questions, which mm-hmm. are HR team and the hiring manager. They do some prep ahead of time to interviews, but then build those around, try and categorize the questions around our values.
And how can you tell if, when somebody might be blowing sunshine up your skirt? That's really the $64,000 question.
Right. Really how passionate they are about yeah. answering it. You can generally see through passion particularly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then how quickly they come up with answers, asking follow-up questions to their responses to see yep. if it's aligning to how we think.
Yeah.
How we define our values. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really smart because that's where you get is when you start to peel back the onion and right. dig into the answer with more questions, right?
Right. And so I think one important thing, yes, and I think one important thing that we've implemented, I think at one point when I started at First Alliance, mm-hmm. our human resources team wasn't necessarily involved in the actual interview. It was delegated to the hiring manager. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. In my opinion, when you don't have, I think it needs to be a pair, especially in our organization, because what you get with that pair is you have the consistency, the anchor, mm-hmm. and you have human resources who's been trained some anti-bias work, trying mm-hmm. to really dig in and also ask the manager questions of that following the interview, right? So they're paired in the interview process. So you not only have the operational perspective, you have the subject matter expertise in hiring, but then afterward, that HR contact can also really ask questions of our manager and get to the bottom of what they're thinking and feeling and help them maybe see something from an HR perspective they hadn't seen.
Mm, yeah, that's interesting.
So I think the quality of our hires has even gone up and getting those mission aligned hires have been critical.
Yeah. So, you know, as you talked about, you had this, you nominated seven people to come up with the mission, vision, and values. As well as bringing in a few more people. But with those first seven, you're an organization of 80 odd people, right? And that's that's less than 10% of your organization. How did you go about finding those people? I know you said that people nominated somebody they thought was really exhibited, you know, who the company is. And then what you did to go about really sealing those people in.
Yeah.
And who are those extra people that you brought in and where'd they come from?
All great questions. So we did a company-wide survey asking who exhibits. First of all, we had a set of, I'm a strong believer that if you have more than three values, your values need to be recitable by the employees to actually mean
right,
something.
Of course.
To be more than just words on the wall.
Yeah.
So I'm a strong believer three is a maximum unless mm-hmm. I would accept maybe up to five if you had an acronym mm-hmm. that is memorable. Mm-hmm. But so that's how we landed on three. Mm-hmm. But we had, I believe, 7 previously, and the most employees could cite off the top of their head, they could get to 4. The average employee could cite no more than 4 of our values. So that was also an indicator that something might have been off.
Mm-hmm.
So employees had, we did a survey on our mission, vision, values, and we also asked employees, I think we had a list of, so we had all the values listed. We had them rank, both rank the order, and then also do a Likert scale, like 1 to 7, strongly agree, agree, disagree, yep, et cetera, that this represents us. So we were able to see which of our past values were valuable or were valued by employees. And then on top of that, we had a list of all the employees. There was a drop down and they could nominate. I believe they had to rank their top 3 or something to that effect of employees that they felt embodied what it meant to be a First Alliance employee who best embodied really the essence of First Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone was listed. So from there, we were able to pull out the 5 to 7 that were nominated the most. And then on top of that, there's some people with some company-wide, like I believe business development, people that are out there in the community representing us. They got a seat at the table, as did our marketing team. However, the folks that were nominated were from across the organization, actually not at the executive level. So it was from across the organization. They could have been at the management level, but not an executive.
Right. Yeah. So there are no executives on the team that built this?
I was in the room, and then our business development person as well.
Okay. Interesting. So when you and I first spoke, we talked a lot about really how you were acquiring customers and what channels and methods and what was working for you and what wasn't working for you. And you talked about the importance of not only, you know, bringing in your, you know, sort of high net worth person that can assist at bringing in some extra cash into the business, right? But the importance of bringing in really having people who, you know, they may be at a regular bank. The banks don't care about anybody. You know, they're just scraping by, you know, maybe don't have 2 nickels to rub together, and the importance of that. I wonder if you can talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. So right now, you know, we are in we're in Rochester, Minnesota. I'm not sure we've mentioned that yet. Rochester, right. Minnesota is the home of the Mayo Clinic. We do serve some Mayo employees, but that's not our primary path. Mayo employees have a different credit union here in town. But we're one of, I believe, 4 financials still based in Rochester. But I believe last I counted, there were 38 financial institutions in Rochester. We've got the Mayo Clinic. The Mayo Clinic has just announced for the last 10 years, we've had what we call Destination Medical Center. And the intention is trying to make people who are coming to the Mayo Clinic for treatment from out of town, out of state, out of country, comfortable here in Rochester. Mm-hmm. So there's that initiative.
Right.
So that was one initiative. But then last year, within the last 2 years, Mayo announced a $5 billion, that's billion with a B, investment into downtown Rochester to build a hospital of the future.
Wow.
So there is a lot of development going on. We're expecting 30,000. We're a town of 120,000 in Rochester proper. I believe 160,000 in our county. Mm-hmm. We're expecting Rochester proper to grow by 30,000 in the next 5 years.
Ooh, that's a lot.
Because of that investment.
Yeah.
There are a lot of financials, you know, a credit union from the Twin Cities, Minnesota, just moved to Rochester. There's a lot of financials. Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of investment, a lot of capital here in Rochester that people are looking to tap into and to borrow, to lend money to borrowers that are looking to capitalize on the development here in Rochester. So there's that going on. Price of living's going up significantly here in Rochester.
Yeah.
Not only the inflation, but a lot of investment in our community. The interesting thing about Rochester, our area moderate income is inflated. Our major employer, 40,000 people are employed in Rochester by the Mayo Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare, a lot of positions pay very healthy. And so with that, it raises the area moderate income.
Mm-hmm.
And leaving, a lot of our service friends who are working in the service industries are getting left behind. In part, St. Paul, our state capital, our legislators look at the AMI of Olmsted and are almost reluctant to send help to dedicate resources to Rochester area because of the inflated AMI. So we have people being left behind here in Rochester.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And going, I mentioned the strategic planning session from 2024 going into 2025. That's also when we defined our board, our executive team sat down in a room and asked ourselves, who are we trying to target? Who's our ideal member? And we believe that the best way into the credit union to establish that loyal behavior, to establish ongoing engaged members, is if we're able to help people that need a first start or fresh start, mm-hmm. there's some longevity there and some loyalty there. And we've seen that in our lending. We do what we call storybook lending. You're more than just your credit score. Again, I mentioned we have about 84 employees. Mm-hmm. Compared to some peers, we also have 6 branches, 7 branches if you count our mobile branch. Mm-hmm. We have a 40-foot truck that goes from town to town as well to where we don't have physical presence. Mm-hmm. So credit unions, our asset size, $335 million, might not have that number of branches. It might be a little bit smaller. So with more branches comes a little more staff. But with that, also our hands-on lending approach, really needing to ask questions, sit down, getting to the bottom. Okay, mm-hmm. so yeah, your credit score is this, but what's the story behind it? Mm-hmm. And so we take that into account and do some manual underwriting to give people a chance and a hand up.
I love that.
So really, to flip side of that, we're also trying to attract people who want to do good in their community. Mm-hmm. And so how we attract, we're not looking for a handout either. We want people to park their money in a deposit. So whether that's a CD, checking account, savings account, money market. So people who are altruistic who feel called. The one thing about Rochester too, do mention the AMI. We have an incredibly altruistic community. We have so many nonprofits per capita. I've heard it's one of the strongest in the nation here in Rochester. I'm not sure that that's what I hear in, around the community. Can't cite any sources. But with that, trying to attract people who want their money, I don't need, if you are happy with your banking relationship, fine. I would love for you to bank with us as your primary financial. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing and you want to do good in the community and protect your capital doing so, protect your principal doing so, park it in a deposit with us, because we can do a lot of good and impact by lending it out.
Yeah, that's really just super, super important. Brent, what would you say is your biggest bottleneck to growth right now? Is that it that you just talked about?
A little bit of that. Mm-hmm. So I do think, we don't want to grow for growth's sake, but we are mm-hmm. growing. We have picked up a substantial amount of momentum in the last few years. I actually just got off with demoing financial analytics software right before our call. We have a lot of positive metrics going on. Our deposits are growing. Our lending is growing at rates much higher. Our membership is growing, all at rates higher than the industry mm-hmm. average. Mm. With that, though, I think I came in 2023 when there's new executive leadership. Sometimes there's some turnover. So I think our biggest bottleneck to growth is maybe some of the tenure of the team. We're all a little bit newer to our jobs. Mm-hmm. However, I think what we lack in tenure, we make up for in initiative and passion, persistence and presence, going back to our values. Mm-hmm. We actually just had our regulatory exam, and that was even a comment in our exit interview. It was, okay, your team's new to the job. They're doing very well. Mm-hmm. So I think there's a little bit of a bottleneck there in having some newer folks and trying to work through some of those kinks. Also, when you're growing at a decent clip, there's some growth pains as well. Mm-hmm. But then, of course, we are constrained a little bit. Our lending is growing organically faster than our deposits. So trying to keep liquidity, what we call liquidity, but trying to get their deposits, more deposits in, so then we can lend it out.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah.
So I'd say that's a constraint as well.
Got it. So this is certainly not your first rodeo working for a credit union. You've been at it for quite a long time. As you mentioned, you joined First Alliance in August of 23. So you're closing in on 3 years. But this is your first role as a CEO.
It is.
So let's talk about, first of all, what interested you in this particular role? And were some of the things that we've talked about, redoing the mission, vision, values, those types of things. Were any of those things even your conscious prior to joining the company?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm about 12 years into credit union leadership. Mm-hmm. Started at a credit union in Oklahoma City in 2014, moved to another credit union as chief lending officer in 2019. Being a CEO, I never necessarily saw it for myself in the beginning. Like when I, essentially 10 years, at 10 years, I'll back up to 20 some years ago. So I've got the pictures. I'm not sure if you noticed, there's a picture of a school bus artwork here and an actual picture of a school bus. Mm-hmm. Right out of college, while I was a finance minor and actually had a job lined up at an investment firm out of college, mm-hmm. felt mm-hmm. like something wasn't aligning for me from a values perspective. The company I was working for was putting folks into some high expense ratio mutual funds and then charging 1% on top of that, and something didn't resonate with me there. Mm-hmm. So I ended up doing AmeriCorps. I applied to an AmeriCorps program and randomly ended up at De La Salle North Catholic High School in Portland, Oregon, and ended up spending 10 years in education between that school, a school in Kansas City, and a school in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I was teaching middle school personal finance when the principal of that school was connected to a credit union. He was on the board of a credit union, and so opened up children's savings accounts. And a credit union in Oklahoma City saw the work I was doing in Tulsa and actually recruited me for that role. So I come up from a little bit of a different background than your average CEO. But coming into Allegiance Credit Union, I was chief lending officer, and mm-hmm. was actually the CEO of Allegiance that really believed in me and mentored me. Mm. Her name's Amy Downs. She has a really inspirational story, just tangentially. She's a survivor of the Oklahoma City bombing. We just had the 31st anniversary over the weekend of the Oklahoma City bombing. So she is a survivor and has a really mm-hmm. powerful story. But working for her as a leader, she actually, I feel, saw something in me that maybe I didn't necessarily see in myself. And she gave me what I called a little birdie conversation. And I believe it was November of 2022. She's like, hey, you're ready now. I'm not going to be retiring. At the time, she thought she was retiring, I believe, next year. She ended up retiring last year, but that's neither here nor there. But she gave me the little birdie conversation. Hey, you need to fly for a nest. I think you should consider starting to apply for CEO roles. And at first, I'm like, didn't feel like I was necessarily ready. I actually had my resume professionally done. Mm-hmm. And getting that back, I'm like, oh my God, like from just a fresh set
look
of
how
eyes,
good I am.
Look how good I am. That's when I started believing I was ready, actually.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? You know, it's funny. I was in a meeting earlier today, and I want to step on the shoulders of that, because that's what you're saying is actually really not uncommon. Yeah. Right?
Right.
And there's a woman in my group, and she's really fantastic. And she was grousing to us about, you know, some challenges she's been having and so on and so forth. And, you know, I asked her, I said, so what's really standing in the way of you to not, she just, oh, I can't get anything closed and so on and so forth. And I said, what's really standing in the way here? Like, do you even know, or is it just something living in a blind spot and you don't know what that is yet? And it took us about almost the whole hour to, you know, work through it with her, but it was really fantastic. And I, and of course, I'm a big storyteller. I think stories are super important because people can picture them. They can picture those stories, right? And that's what I think the genius is, or the effectiveness of storytelling, right? And I told her a couple of stories as they became appropriate. And, it really unlocked for her some things that, you know what? I actually am really good. I am a thought leader. I am the expert. I am the authority.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, that's all. I mean, listen, I'm an advocate. I think every CEO should have an executive coach. But not they don't all do that. They don't all think they need it. But the reality is to have that third party who's not attached to the emotions of you, like a spouse or a friend or something, who can come in and really not be attached to the outcome and look at, well, here are all the things about myself. And that's what your resume writer helps do for you.
100%. Just some of this brought up a few things of what you were saying resonated with me.
Yeah.
The fact that I was in a room full of about, I think, 11 other credit union CEOs from across the country a few mm-hmm. weeks ago, we all experience, regardless of asset size, regardless of tenure, we all experience imposter syndrome of some kind in some way.
You're going to say that. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I think someone, the most tenured CEO in the room, who is actually 2 years from retirement, his biggest fear was, am I still equipped to lead the organization forward into the future? So that was very powerful to me because it also just normalizes that. And I do have an executive coach myself, and he uses the term, not saboteur. You have an internal saboteur. We're all our worst critic, and we need to learn coping mechanisms to ensure that critic doesn't become our saboteur.
Right. I would say that from one of my greatest coaches said to me, being inside your own head is like being behind enemy lines. It's a little simpler and it's really powerful, right? Not that he's not, he sounds like he's an inner critic guy, but yeah, it's super important because this is what we do, right? We, you know, have that yap, 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 yap. And then we start to believe it. And it's really it is like being behind enemy lines. It's a very dangerous place to be. It can derail your, you know, everything in your personal life, in your professional life, how you're leading people. Yeah. So what was it specifically then about First Alliance that, tripped your trigger, let's say?
Yeah. So I was working with a recruiter. The recruiter's name was a group called Humanity. And I'd interviewed for a different CEO role in a different state. The day Jill Nowacki is the president and CEO's name and I of Humanity. And she picked up the phone, gave me a call to give me what I call the breakup talk for the credit union I had interviewed with, the board I'd interviewed with. Always the groomsman, never the groom, or always
always the bridesmaid, never the bride. Yes, that's exactly correct. Yeah, always the groomsman, never the groom.
Yeah, and so came in second with this credit union, and actually in that breakup call, she had mentioned that, hey, I have a credit union that I think is going to be a really good fit to you. Mm-hmm. And I immediately, she's like, how do you feel about Rochester, Minnesota? I'd never heard of Rochester, Minnesota. I had heard of Mayo Clinic, didn't know it was based in Rochester.
Right. Yeah, of course.
But my wife and I had a list of four things that we were looking for in a community. Rochester checked all four.
Nice.
But specifically about the credit union, the board was proud of its, we do manufactured home lending to in parks. Like, that's highly unusual. Usually we do it, other institutions do it on owned land, not in parks, because there is a little bit of added risk with that lot rent potentially going up and making the loan unaffordable. Mm-hmm. So there was that. There was I-10 lending, individual taxpayer identification number. So potentially to newcomers or an immigrant population. There was a storybook lending I'd mentioned. Like, all of these things were aligning that I saw a lot of values driven in the organization. So you'd asked also, so that's what attracted me to that.
Yeah.
And then the fact that I was so values first, the current chair of my board was the chair of the selection committee or the search committee. Mm-hmm. There was a subsection of the board dedicated to the search. And I think, so we had a mutual attraction over each of us perceiving the other as being values driven. So with that, it didn't necessarily come in thinking, hey, we needed to redefine our mission, vision, values, because it already existed in the organization. Mm-hmm. But what was clear after a year and after going through strategic planning, that there's not, it wasn't even misalignment. It just didn't provide motivation to the staff. It didn't feel tangible. It wasn't simple. So our mission, vision, values are very approachable. They're memorable. And in part, the staff feel like they co-created them, which creates extra buy-in. So again, mentioned that we have higher loan growth and higher deposit growth and higher member growth than industry average. And I think that's, again, because of getting the team behind, and what motivates the team is feeling like they're making a difference in people's lives.
Yeah.
And the mission, vision, values put a framework around that, but then it's a feeling they get in serving our members every day and what we're able to do and how we're able to help.
Yeah, that's really fantastic. Branch, is there anything that you and I have not talked about that I didn't ask you, that I neglected to ask you, that you want to talk about before we sign off here?
Yeah, I just...
Words of wisdom.
Words of wisdom. I just think there's something to be said around purpose. I'd recently read, there's an article in the Twin Cities Business Journal just this month on trying to connect people to not just their job, but trying to make their job mean something. Mm-hmm. So you can find purpose in your existing job. You can find purpose in your existing company, but it's really trying to connect. You'd mentioned storytelling. That's, I think, a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Are you telling your customer story? Are you telling your member story? Are you telling the story of the impact your employees? Mm-hmm. What impact are they having and on who? And are you telling the story of who they're having an impact on?
Yeah.
And that's where, regardless of mission, vision, values, if you can tell that story, people start feeling the impact they're making. And that creates some, I'd say, intrinsic motivation beyond just the paycheck. People are going to come to work if they like what they do and they feel like they're making a difference. Mm-hmm. It's going to be an evolving workspace.
Well, fantastic. I have nothing more to add. So Brent Rempe, President and CEO of First Alliance Credit Union, thanks for being with me. I knew this was going to be an interesting conversation, and I'm grateful that I was right about that.
Yeah, again, appreciate the invitation, Carol.
Thanks for listening to Evolving Your Workplace. Is there a topic you want to discuss? Let us know what you think in a review. And don't forget to click follow to stay up to date on upcoming episodes. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.